From our studios in downtown Washington, D.C., this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. This is National Crime Victims' Rights Week, and one of the things we're doing today is to talk about the issue of victims' rights. I started off with the victims' rights issue or movement decades ago when I was the Senior Specialist for Crime Prevention and Victim Services for the Department of Justice's Clearinghouse, the National Criminal Justice Reference Service. And even back then, it was just an emerging topic because there was a lot of conflict between victims and the criminal justice system that is designed to serve them, but in many cases did not. To talk about this whole issue of victim services in today's world, we have three principals with us. We have Bonnie Andrews. She is the Victim Services Program Manager for my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. We have Michelle Thomas from the United States Attorney's Office. She is the Victims Program Specialist. And again, from my agency, we have Peggy Sandifer. She is the Community Supervision Officer dealing specifically with domestic violence. And to ladies, welcome to DC Public Safety. A very quick commercial. Ladies and gentlemen, we respond to every inquiry, every email, every Twitter. We really appreciate all of the response that you've given us, all the feedback. We're up to about 130,000 requests on a monthly basis, and we are really appreciative. If you want to get in touch with me directly, it is Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D, dot Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, at C-S-O-S-A.gov, or follow me via Twitter at twitter.com/Len, L-E-N, Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, no space. And back to our guest, Bonnie Andrews, the Victim Services Program Manager for my agency, again, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Tell me about a little bit about National Crime Victims Rights Week, Bonnie.
Good morning, Len. Thank you for having us here. We're always happy to talk about victims of crime, particularly this week. The National Crime Victim Rights Week is the time where we celebrate victims of crime, the rights that victims have, and the service providers that do such wonderful work in their communities with working with victims of crime.
An extraordinarily difficult topic. As a former police officer, I dealt with the victims and families all the time. And wow.
It is difficult.
I was one of the hardest things that I've ever done in my life. How do you go up to a family and say that your daughter's just been raped and she's at Memorial Hospital and here are the circumstances as we understand them? We've got an active ongoing criminal investigation, so we're going to need your help and looking at a family of shocked people. I mean, so it's just not the victim, as tragic as the story that I'm saying. It's the victim's family. It's the larger community that is impacted by this. There are going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are going to be making decisions based upon their perception of their own personal safety, based upon this case. So the issue of victim services is enormously important to us.
Absolutely. With any type of crime, it's difficult to approach the victim and or the family. Well, the family is a victim also. They become a secondary victim, as does the community. But you have to keep in mind that dealing with the victim and the families, to be respectful of what they're going through, and to be empathetic with that person or people, and honest, that regardless of what they're going through, that you have to be honest with them about the circumstances. But I think that Michelle Thomas could probably answer that question a little further.
It's a perfect segue as we go over to Michelle Thomas.
Okay, great.
And Michelle is with the United States Attorney's Office. You know, again, Michelle, one of the things I do want to point out to our listeners is that anybody in the District of Columbia, although show is heard worldwide within the District of Columbia, within Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, all of the major criminal justice agencies have victims' representatives. So it doesn't matter whether it's the police department, the United States Attorney's Office, or our agency, Court Services, or Offender Supervision Agency. The whole concept is that any one of us is there to assist victims of crime.
That's true. And we're all advocates. They're advocates on all fronts, whether it's with the Metropolitan Police Department, the United States Attorney's Office, or CSOSA. We basically have the same kind of role in assisting the victim. My role in my office with the U.S. Attorney's Office is to basically listen to the victim, help the victim decide what his or her needs are, and try to figure out how to best meet those needs, to do a plan for safety for the victim and their family.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the issues here, and I think this has been brought up in research, it's been brought up probably through 100 hearings or more, 1,000 hearings or more throughout the country, is that victims of crime and their family members have complained bitterly in the past that we, within the criminal justice bureaucracy, simply don't give them time, we don't listen to them, they become almost adversaries. We have to do a criminal investigation, so we're limited in terms of the amount of information that we give out. One of their big complaints in the past have been prosecutorial officers throughout the country who would decide upon a plea bargain without involving the victim. Victims have said traditionally they're left out. So what do we say to victims now?
Well, you know what? There is a basic law. It's the Crime Victims' Rights Act that defines the rights for victims, and that is that a victim has the right to be heard, reasonably protected, timely notice of proceedings, unreasonable delay. They need to be heard at the hearings. They can confer with the government, prosecutors. They should be treated with dignity and respect. That's basically it.
The Crime Victims' Rights Act is what, national?
That's a federal law.
That's a federal law.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you all here. It's a federal law. It is a federal law with the things that you just mentioned must happen, that we within the criminal justice system, well, a lot of people in the criminal justice system, I'm not quite sure they understand that there is indeed a federal law that applies to crime victims. So in essence, what that act is saying is that we, and it applies to local law enforcement agencies and state law enforcement agencies, not just federal law enforcement agencies, or criminal justice agencies, I should say, it applies to all of us. And basically it says that we've got to really listen to and respect the victim's point of view.
We have to.
Okay. Bonnie, go ahead, please.
Lynn, you mentioned that some of the victims have noted that their voices are not often heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the purposes of having victim advocates within the agencies, the law enforcement agencies, is to have a sounding board available for that victim.
Right, but my here's my point, is that all of us work in bureaucracies. I've been in the criminal justice system since I was, for the last 40 years, since I was 18 and was a cadet in the Maryland State Police. All of us know that bureaucracies can really push back hard when you're being a pain. When, I'm a public affairs officer, sometimes I have to actually advocate for stuff that's not popular amongst, the hierarchy. And I'm not talking about this agency. I'm talking about all of my agencies. It's sometimes hard to push up against management saying your decision is not the right decision. You really do need to understand the circumstances here when I have to advocate for a reporter's point of view. Mm-hmm. It's the same with you guys. It's not the easiest thing to get in there and be sure that the victim is taken care of.
Well, we operate within the Crime Victims' Rights Act, and that is a law. It's a federal law.
How often do you have to remind bureaucrats that that law exists?
Quite often.
Yeah, quite often. Okay. That's my point. My point is that all of us who are passionate about the issue of victims and serving victims, we've got to be advocates. All of us have to be advocates, correct? Michelle, we have to be advocates for victim services, and sometimes we have to push our administrators to do the right thing.
And you know what? One of the things that we're doing during this week is to bring forward a mini conference. Now, Bonnie Andrews hosts an annual roundtable discussion on different topics.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I'm privileged because she's pulled me in along with a group called Breaking the Silence East of the River Committee,
mm-hmm.
so that we could pick a topic. And the topic that we picked to share this year is prosecuting cases
mm-hmm.
with multiple victims mm-hmm. and witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And we're putting in place all the blood, sweat, and tears that a team of people have to go through to bring a perpetrator to justice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing that this week.
Tomorrow.
And the key issue in all of this is interagency cooperation. I'm going to go over to Peggy Sandifer. Peggy, one of the things that you do in terms of your outreach to victims is, and I know all of you, all three of you, deal with the domestic violence issue, but you in particular, as a community supervision officer here of my agency, you work with the domestic violence population, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, what I do, I facilitate groups for men and women who either have been convicted of or admitted to use of domestic violence.
Okay, and it's mostly men.
Yes.
Overwhelmingly
men. But the female population is beginning to grow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And so what does that mean? So you're there telling the individuals who are charged or convicted, rather, of acts of domestic violence, because we are basically a parole and probation agency. Right. So they've been convicted, I'm almost certain, in virtually all cases of probation. They've been placed on probation by a judge, and they've been basically put in, or we put them into the domestic violence unit. What do you say when you're talking to individuals about their victims?
Well, the domestic violence intervention program is for people who have admitted to or either been found guilty of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. Then they come to our program. We have a one-hour orientation process that will tell them or give them an idea what's going to happen or what they'll be discussing for the next 22 sessions. Mm-hmm. Our sessions are once a week, an hour and a half.
Right.
And we talk about the power and control wheel, such as physical abuse, emotional abuse, isolation, intimidation, mm-hmm. and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they are confronted and challenged regarding their behaviors.
The big complaint on the part of domestic violence victims is that the individual won't leave them alone, especially if there is a protective order. We can mm-hmm. actually put a global positioning system or satellite tracking device on them that automatically alerts us that if this individual is within a half a mile of the victim's home or the victim's place of work, correct?
Right. But the only problem with that, Leonard, is when people are in love and those emotions are going this way and that way, they don't know if they want to stay, they don't want to know if they want to go back, it's very difficult.
But isn't that the heart and soul, Peggy, of why those of us in the criminal justice system who have been not the most staunch supporters of mm-hmm. victims' rights, isn't that the heart and soul of the difficulty in terms of our relationship with victims? Because victims are, one day the victims want the individual prosecuted, and the next day the victims are going, I think I've changed my mind. And in some cases, they can change their mind. In some cases, whether they like it or not, they're going to court.
My experience is that the ladies want the abuse to stop.
Right.
And
they don't necessarily want them prosecuted.
Right. They just want the abuse to stop. And from my side, it's very difficult to talk to a victim to get them to understand that domestic violence is progressive. It can start with an emotional abuse, and then it goes to physical abuse. Maybe somebody calls you a nasty, dirty name, and then the next time they call you a nasty, dirty name, and they push you. The next time they call you a nasty, dirty name, they push you and shove you, and they pop you in the mouth.
It is progressive, and I totally agree with you. And when we're talking about domestic violence, because it's the larger issue of service to victims, it gets down into stranger-to-stranger violence mm-hmm. versus interpersonal violence. And most child victims are victimized by somebody who they know. Mm-hmm. Most women are victimized by somebody who they know, and that's U.S. Department of Justice statistics. So we've got that part of it, and we've got stranger-to-stranger crime that we do need to talk about. Somebody who pops out and just puts a gun to your head and wants your money. But that's even that stereotypical, because in three-quarters of robberies, a firearm is not displayed. But I'm digressing. Getting back to your issue, it is making sure that we respect victims' rights, but once a victim has announced that they've been victimized in a domestic violence case. And when I say domestic violence, I'm not talking about, in many cases, shoving or hitting. I'm talking about, in many cases, if not most cases, the woman victim was beaten up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. Once she makes that announcement, then she has to proceed with those charges.
Well, when you're talking about being victimized, a lot of shame and embarrassment comes with that.
Right.
And it's the thing, people, most of the time, a woman will have been victimized anywhere from 6 to 10 times.
Right.
Before she actually calls the police.
Right.
And more often than not, a neighbor will call the police.
Right.
Rather than the victim.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if it's a case, in the District of Columbia and most cities throughout the country now, once the police respond to a domestic violence case, if they see evidence of domestic violence, they have to make an arrest.
Well, the law in the District of Columbia now that arrest has to be made.
Okay.
Somebody has to go.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And if they fight each other, then both go.
Both go.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The larger issue, and didn't this begat a larger issue of again, we're there to serve victims, but victims at the same time need to understand that they need to cooperate with prosecutors. And isn't that a whirlwind? We're going to go back to Michelle Thomas from the United States Attorney's Office. That's a whirlwind problem of trying to accommodate the victim's needs, trying to be sympathetic to the victim's needs, but the victim needs to be involved in prosecuting the person who did this to him or her.
Most of the victims want to be involved, but there are a lot of obstacles that would prevent a victim from going forward.
They are.
If we're talking about D.C. alone, there are probably a couple of shelters. There are two shelters
mm-hmm.
that house victims and their children.
Mm-hmm.
They probably turn away maybe 9 to 10 families for every one that they can provide
shelter
for.
That's a tragedy. So what she's saying in terms of, we're talking domestic violence, and I do want to broaden it to all crime. But in terms of domestic violence, if you don't have any place to take the kids, you're stuck with your set of circumstances, and that indeed is a tragedy because we're not talking about yelling, we're not talking about screaming. Most of the cases that I've been involved in as a police officer, you're talking about the male really putting a hurting onto the female victim.
Well, in our office, with the U.S. Attorney's Office, we have a no tolerance for crime. And prosecutors in our office will simply take a perpetrator to court. And it's my role as an advocate, victim witness program person, to assist with meeting the needs of a victim, finding a safe place. And often, there's no safe place to refer a person to. We have the Crime Victim Compensation Program.
Mm-hmm.
Our office has a witness security program,
mm-hmm.
but we're not always able to accommodate a victim.
And that's the crux of the criminal justice system across the board. Because we don't have enough cops, we don't have enough correctional officers, we don't have enough parole and probation agents, we don't have enough drug treatment, we don't have enough mental health treatment, we don't have enough victim services resources. So that becomes sort of a problem for all of us in the criminal justice system, this larger issue of resources. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ms. Sandifer.
And a lot of reasons why victims don't leave is the economic piece.
Right.
Especially if the male is bringing in the majority of the money.
Right.
You know, they don't have any money coming in on their own.
Right.
And we always try to encourage them to try to put a little money aside so that you can get away.
These are real world issues, almost in many cases insurmountable issues that all three of you deal with on a day in, day out basis. I mean, what do you do to escape the pressure and strain? Bonnie Andrews, you know, it is. You know, I used to go and work directly with victims when I was in law enforcement, and boy, I had to go home and prop up my feet and have a beer or two. It was like, my heavens, that's a tough set of circumstances to be in. How do you cope with it?
I'm an exercise junkie.
There you go.
I believe that we have to take care of ourselves in order to take care of the victim.
Yes.
We can't neglect our own bodies or our spiritual base. We have to stay centered. And sometimes, you know, we are human, so we can't always do that. We have off days just like anyone else.
Sure.
But the roundtable that I started to facilitate about 7 years ago
mm-hmm.
is one of the resources that we use for victim advocates to come together and look at our obstacles that all of us face.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're in Maryland, D.C., or Virginia, we continue to face the same obstacles.
You all get together in the tri-state area from the District of Columbia and Maryland, Virginia,
yes,
to talk about all this?
We look at resources that may not be available, and we collaborate with the resources that are there. We put a face to the names of the providers that
sure,
we talk to on the phone on a regular basis, and we share information that may be helpful with other victim service providers that we may not have had before coming to the round table.
Want to remind everybody that this is DC Public Safety. We're taking our halfway through break, way late. Bonnie Andrews is the Victim Services Program Manager for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. From the U.S. Attorney's Office, we have Michelle Thomas. She's a Victim Program Specialist. Also at our microphones is Peggy Sandifer. She is a Community Supervision Officer dealing specifically with domestic violence. Bonnie, I'm going to continue with you for a second. Okay, so how do we convince people who are very skeptical? I mean, you know, calling the IRS, calling the Environmental Protection Agency, calling your local police department, most people are scared to death to do that. I've been in the system for 40 years, and I don't like contacting government, mm-hmm, because we have this view of government as being standoffish and bureaucratic and pushing back. How do you convince people that we really are here to help them? How do we convince people to call us?
We are out here continuously providing education and information to the community, and we do this job because we are passionate about it. It's nothing glamorous about working with a victim of crime and seeing that person at the worst possible moment of their life.
Right.
So you have to have a sense of passion about the work that you do, and that shows in the work that you do every day.
Metropolitan Police Department has their own victim services.
Yes, they
and
do.
Most police departments, mm-hmm, throughout the country have their own victim services coordinators. I didn't,
yes,
want to throw that in, but we did. But I mean, for everybody, it's just really hard to convince people, come to us. We want to listen to you. We want to help you understand how the criminal justice system works, and what to do.
You know, a victim may call. For instance, a victim may call me and want services when they initially make that call.
Mm-hmm.
And after I have talked to them about the services that may be available, they might change their mind on that day. But I have to leave the door open for them to know that if you don't want the services today, maybe next week you might want the services or next month. And we have to leave that door open to let them know that they can come back at any time without any questions being asked or any judgment being placed on that person.
You understand the nature of the bureaucracy.
Yes.
The average citizen goes, oh my gosh, I gotta call motor vehicles. I got stories to tell about Maryland's motor vehicles, let me tell you. And so you have this, oh heavens, I've got to filter my way through this bureaucracy. In essence, any police officer is supposed to refer the person to victims services.
Mm-hmm.
Any community supervision officer within our agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, is supposed to refer people to you. Anybody within the United States Attorney's Office is supposed to refer people to Michelle. We're all supposed to be there instantaneously.
Absolutely.
But and so, I mean, I don't know of a group of people who are more passionate within the criminal justice system than victim providers. You all are gutsy people to be able to deal with the bureaucracy on a day-to-day basis and deal with the people with huge needs. But that was my question. How do you really convince people? Okay, Michelle, and then we'll go over to Peggy. How do you really convince people that the bureaucracy really wants to hear from you in your most difficult of times?
You know, a lot of the calls that I get are people who have called the police out of fear for their life. So sometimes the balance is so great, it would prompt a victim to call or the neighbors would call to say, you know, please come. This person is in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so in D.C., there are about 4,500 complaints filed each year in the domestic violence intake centers.
Mm-hmm.
So people are coming forward. But the outreach efforts on all our behalf, it's necessary.
But I'm not domestic violence is almost part of the everyday reaction of the criminal justice system. I mean, I do want to emphasize that there are victims of robbery, victims of burglary. There are people who were just simply mugged. There are people who were simply beaten up. There are people who were threatened or intimidated. There's all sorts of crimes that when we talk about crime out there. So that person was walking down the street and was pushed to the ground, and their purse was taken, and they were violently pushed to the ground. They're injured. They have to go to the hospital. And so suddenly this person who was just angry and hurt and scared all at the same time has to come to grips with, oh, geez, now I got to deal with the criminal justice system.
Well, that's a process. In D.C., the police, they play a really major role because that's the link between the community
right. And
the criminal justice system.
Right.
For the most of us on this panel today, most of our phone calls from victims come through interaction with police.
And most cops are victims' advocates. That's my guess. Now, am I right or wrong? But feel free to disagree.
For the most part, I mean, the police have come a long way.
Yeah.
We do training, as a matter of fact, for the Metropolitan Police Department to increase their sensitivity about cases
mm-hmm.
that involve crime.
Right.
And so for the most part, the police have come a long way and made a great change toward victim advocacy.
Okay. Stephanie, you've been trying, or Peggy, we've been trying to enjoy the conversation, and I apologize for taking so long to get around to you. So what is your take on this, Peggy? You represent the parole and probation system. Do our people fully understand the needs and rights of victims?
Well, I have to make contacts with the victims as well.
Right.
And I always let them know about the services that are available for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to go a little bit deeper than that, because most of us were brought up in homes where what goes on in our house
mm-hmm.
stays in our what goes on in our house stays in our house
mm-hmm.
and that's why we try to keep that secret.
Mm-hmm.
Family can look like they're the best family in the world, or Leave It to Beaver family.
Yeah, nobody knows what's going
nobody
on behind
knows
closed
going on
doors
behind
that's right
those
I agree
doors.
With you
it's so much
you.
Shame and it's very difficult to compare that type of crime to somebody being robbed on the street.
Well,
because people that's involved in this, they have feelings about each other.
Yeah.
So that's the difference.
And that is the difference, but I didn't want the show to be about domestic violence. Mm-hmm. I wanted the show to be about the broader issue of crime victimization. Mm-hmm. But the domestic violence part of it is something that has always been very special to me. My first case as a cadet in the state police riding with a trooper was going to a domestic violence incident, and there was a trailer, and we knocked on the door of the trailer, and here's a woman who answers the door, and her face was twice his size.
Mm-hmm.
He had beaten her with a frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue here is that she didn't want to prosecute.
Right.
And as far as we were concerned, that's aggravated assault. We didn't need her permission to arrest her husband. And her husband fought us. He was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And from that day, I said to myself, my God, how many women, I know it, men are victims too.
Somebody's being abused right now.
The degree of victimization is astounding, and the impact on their lives and the families is astounding. So I just wanted to broaden it, however important that is, beyond the larger criminal justice system. We're going to go back to Bonnie Andrews. So, Bonnie, what am I saying? That's right or wrong?
Well, we don't want to belabor this point about domestic violence, because we know this is National Crime Victims Rights Week,
right.
And that encompasses all types of crimes.
That's right.
But when we look at the crimes that we deal with, particularly within our agency, CSOSA,
mm-hmm.
we tend to, 90% of the time, we tend to come back to domestic violence.
Really?
We do.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay, so the victims of robbery and the victims of burglary and the victims of muggings and the victims of aggravated assaults, they pretty much go on with their lives?
No, I'm not saying that they pretty much go on with their lives, but when we get an offender that we are working with,
mm-hmm.
At some point, even if that offender has been convicted of a drug crime, and I'll give you, for instance, an example of a woman that I worked with
okay.
this morning.
Right.
Her husband had been convicted of a drug crime.
Right.
But when she came in to see me this morning, she did not come into my office because of his drug crime, but she came in because of domestic violence.
And it just struck me in terms of this entire conversation. I'm stupid at times, and I just don't get it at first,
stupid.
Regardless of my years in the criminal justice. I am, too, just ask my wife and daughters. The point is that domestic violence is a continuing, ongoing thing where that robbery is a one-time event. So that's mm-hmm. why you're probably mm-hmm. seeing the degree of domestic violence victims. You're going to have to wrap up. We're almost through the 30-second point. Bonnie, I'm going to give you the final word. Just tell victims of crime what they need to do.
We are here for you in any agency, law enforcement agency that you come into contact with. There should be a victim service advocate, victim service provider within that agency.
And if there's not, there's somebody at the state level. If not, there's somebody within that agency who is there to take care of you.
You will call 911.
We
want you to call 911 first. Because the law, police, MPD, they need to, be on the scene to protect
and all law enforcement agencies throughout the country need to dial 911. Bonnie Andrews, the Victim Services Program Manager for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency from the United States Attorney's Office. Michelle Thomas, Victims Program Specialist, and Peggy Sandifer, she's a Community Supervision Officer, otherwise known most places throughout the country as a parole and probation agent. She is now specializing in domestic violence. Ladies, thank you very much for being on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Again, we respond to every comment, every call, every email. We appreciate your suggestions for the show. We appreciate your criticisms as well. Anything that you had to say, we welcome them. And please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.